Mark Latham joins us now.
What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good, Brent. Yourself?
Not too bad, mate. On an eventful morning, an assassination attempt, it appears. Although we don't know a lot of information at the moment, we do know that the shooter is dead and that we know that one attendee at the rally in Pennsylvania has been killed as well. But they're describing it as an assassination attempt against Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's a big moment in American history. This is the first time that blood's been drawn against a president or, you know, high-profile candidate since the shooting of Ronald Reagan in 1981, which, of course, he survived. So Trump was addressing the rally there at Butler, Pennsylvania, what appears to be sort of a regional town, tens of thousands of people present when he reached for his right ear. And, subsequent photos have shown blood streaming from the ear where some object has hit him, something most likely from some sort of firearm. The details of that aren't clear. Some people said it sounded like a clicking sound. Others thought it was a gun of some description. So we'll have to get more detail on that front. But, the reports say that whoever fired the object at Trump has been shot. And it seems that person is dead and there's someone else seriously injured. So not a good thing. I suppose if you have a divisive political climate, a hotbed in the United States, you have these big rallies, tens of thousands of people were there. They obviously put a perimeter fence around the area, which is in an open field, and they apparently have wanding of those who want to attend as they come through, and bag searches and the like. It's like airport security as it needs to be, but tens of thousands of people, someone's obviously got through up to no good, and quite possibly Trump is lucky to be alive right now.
What do you think, if anything, this will do for his campaign, for his popularity, I suppose?
Well, his reaction was interesting because obviously he hit the deck and the Secret Service agents swarmed in on top of him and picked him up and formed a human shield around him. But at the top of that human shield, he's got his fist raised, yelling out, fight, fight. So Donald Trump, how would people react in that circumstance where you'd have to think there's been an attempt on your life? Some would be so petrified that they'd just allow the Secret Service to carry them off stage and into the vehicle and go to the hospital. But Trump, his instinct was to basically continue campaigning, to yell out to the crowd with a raised, clenched fist, fight, fight, fight. So whatever you say about Donald Trump, he's no coward. And that image of him with the fist and yelling out fight would indicate for his campaign the American people would know they've got a fighter who would stand up to anything, at any risk, at any danger, at any time. So I thought his reaction was as remarkable as the terrible scene of the blood coming from his ear in the first place.
And as the president in his statement today has said, Joe Biden released a statement only minutes ago, he is saying there is no place for violence in America.
Well, it's a country full of violence.
It is, isn't it? Yes, it really is.
Gun accessibility and shootings that we see in schools and other places are obviously tragic in their political system. You'd have to say Donald Trump, who's been campaigning now for 9 years and has copped all sorts of abuse and ridicule and attacks on him from the media, his opponents and the like, it's probably amazing that this is the first time there's been an incident, really. Trump would obviously have possibly dozens of threats of this kind against him every week as he moves around the country. He's been accessible. He doesn't hide in the basement. He goes out into an open field with tens of thousands of people there at these huge rallies that draw enormous crowds. So perhaps it was only a matter of time until we saw something like this. I was surprised that there was no bulletproof glass in front of him. Often at these rallies or open-air appearances by American politicians, they'll have the protective shield of glass in front of them. We'll probably see that in the future for Trump. And it's a big event also because they've got their Republican National Convention starting this week. So, huge event in their politics, and thankfully Donald Trump it's a passing wound, and overall he's safe and sound.
Yes, only yesterday there was a story in one of the papers. It says, in case they were ever worried about running out of things to shoot, Americans can now buy ammunition from vending machines at a grocery store. Once verified, customers can purchase ammunition 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Six of the machines are in stores across Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, including one next to a school. The machines have raised concern among gun control advocates after a July 4 holiday weekend where 340 were shot dead and another 756 wounded. We have the story today, but in the Texas, Alabama, Oklahoma, in fact, six machines are in stores across those states in America. You can buy your ammo 24/7 at a grocery store.
Well, it's unthinkable by Australian standards, of course, but they do have a legal constitutional amendment they stick to that gives them the right of self-defence to be armed. In that self-defence, it was designed originally to fight off the British in their War of Independence. That was the constitutional right, but it's been taken as a right of self-defence across the board. It's almost like the American way of life. Not many Australians could ever put up with that. And what you've just described, it just seems absurd by our standards. We have a very different set of gun laws in this country, of course, and by and large they've kept people safe. So it's not hard to access a firearm in the United States, but we still don't know what sort of object or weapon was used in firing at Trump. And the clicking sound that you hear on the audio was almost like some firework or explosive thing that was fired at him, grazed his right ear, which drew a lot of blood. We'll have to get a lot more detail because this has only happened a couple of hours ago.
We'll wait for that to come through. And as I've been saying all morning, we'll keep you up to date as that information comes through. Let's talk Joe Biden, his worries and concerns for the Democrats still continue. I mean, we had NATO. He's there on the stage. He's got all the representatives of NATO around him on the stage. President Zelensky off to his left, and he's introducing him. And as soon as he goes off that cue card, he introduces President Zelensky as President Putin.
I've said before, Russia will not prevail in this war. Ukraine will prevail in this war, and we'll stand with them every single step of the way. That's what the compact says, loudly and clearly. And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin.
Dearing me. Does it get any worse for Joe Biden,
later
Mark?
Later in the day, in his first open media press conference in 9 months, he referred to his vice president as Donald Trump instead of Kamala Harris. So it kind of did get worse. Those two bloopers on the one day indicate that Biden, if he's not geriatric, he's certainly having seniors moments on a regular basis, and the reports are now that Nancy Pelosi, the former Democrat speaker, also Barack Obama, have got together and are devising a strategy to try and ease him out, which is not easy to do on the basis that Biden's got all the delegates from the primaries. The Democrats allowed him to run unopposed, and when they go to their convention, normally, if Biden was of sound mind, they'd just wave him through and he'd be uncontested on the floor of the convention. But if Biden wants to stay, and he's losing support left, right and centre, even George Clooney, all the Hollywood stars who raise millions of dollars in his fundraising, they've abandoned him. At that fundraiser from a few weeks ago, they thought he wasn't of sound mind. So for those looking at the obvious, Biden's got to go, but how they get him out remains an open wound for the Democrat Party in a political sense. And I don't think it's going to get any easier. This Trump news today takes the attention off Biden and all his woes and these gaffes and mistakes that he's been making. So it gives him a bit of breathing space. I suppose that's one thing in the politics of it. And Biden might be hanging on even a bit longer.
I just see on the screen in my studio here, he's now responding to the Trump rally shooting, so no doubt we'll get some reports from that after he's completed that particular press conference. Russian spy story this week. A woman accused of being a Russian spy was one of the faces of an Australian Defence Force recruitment campaign. That story's come out today. Kira Korolev featured in a video on the ADF careers website, and she was quoted as saying, "I was able to join without any prior experience because the army provided full training. Of course, Kira and her husband, Igor, were arrested by AFP on Thursday and charged with espionage offences after police allege they attempted to pass information on to the Kremlin, Mark.
Well, if they were doing that, it's good they've been caught, but it has raised some questions about recruitment and vetting of people. These were Russians who became Australian citizens, but obviously kept a close affinity with Russia and the Kremlin, and leaking information from inside our military, going to Moscow and doing that, you know, it's traitorous, if proven. So these are allegations that will be tested in the court, but it's not a good look for the ADF, it's not a good look for their recruitment program, and I think they need to take extra care with those who come from Russia, China, the obvious places, if they've been citizens of those countries. We need to be ultra careful in allowing them to join our defence force. You know, it's a huge worry in a country where we're trying to build up our defence against these aggressive nations overseas. Well, to have fifth columnists, people inside our defence force, acting this way is obviously, you know, a terrible sign, and the alarm bell should be ringing. They need to overhaul their vetting process to make sure it can't happen again.
True. I see the CFMEU boss, John Setka, he quit yesterday. Now, this is amid allegations surrounding the organisation's connection with bikie gangs in Victoria. Setka was the Secretary of Unions for South Australia, Victoria and the Tasmanian divisions. I see that overnight the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has welcomed Mr. Setka's resignation. Anthony Albanese said he had no legitimate place in the Labor movement. Trade unions exist to look after workers, to look after their wages and conditions and health and safety. They don't exist to engage in the sort of conduct John Setka has clearly been engaged with, is what the Prime Minister said overnight.
Yeah, well, Brent, they must be very serious allegations, because John Setka's a tough character. He's seen off a lot of allegations in the past, some in very personal involving his wife and others to do with the union and its conduct. So these are investigations launched by the Nine media newspapers, and they've come up with allegations, some of which we've sort of heard before, but they're serious enough to force this guy's resignation, which I think is good for the union movement. Union membership in Australia has been sliding downwards. To have thugs on building sites, to have associations with organised crime has been terrible. Setka himself has probably been seen as the ugly face of Australian unionism, so ugly that even the Labor Party won't tolerate him. So they're glad to see him go. I think most people would be, and we'll have to wait and see if the allegations lead to any criminal charges. But, you know, it's the ongoing problem of intimidation and thugs on building sites. There's reports of small businesses being intimidated unless they, you know, dance to the tune of the CFMEU officials. So it's not just Setka. It's an institutionalised problem that needs to be cleared out.
It is, and we've been hearing these stories for years of this going on in the background, haven't we?
Well, there's a bit of ping-pong goes on. A coalition government comes in, they set up the watchdog commission for these building sites, and it has, you know, some positive success. But the culture doesn't change, and then Labor comes in, they get rid of the commission, and then it's a free-for-all. So Setka's resignation is a sign that the problems haven't been solved. And you do need a watchdog, you know, but it's also true, and some fairness to the CFMEU. It's a tough industry. There's injuries and deaths on building sites. They've got to be strong union officials to make sure that all the work, health and safety regulations are followed. There are some companies that cut corners and people die. So it's a tough industry, but there's never any excuse for the sort of thing that's alleged against Setka and the union. It would be well advised for the union to clean up its act and to bring back the commission watchdog to make sure that the conduct on the building sites is fair and reasonable.
True. An independent inquiry. Now, this inquiry is going to have wide-ranging powers. It's going to look into the New South Wales greyhound racing industry. This is days, just days, after fresh concerns were raised about animal welfare. The inquiry is going to be led by the Greyhound Welfare Integrity Commission. The Gaming and Racing Minister, David Harris, said the inquiry would examine a number of complaints around greyhound racing in New South Wales, including track safety, animal welfare and its operation. They have until, I think it's December 13, to submit those findings, Mark.
Well, it's a long-running, painful story for the greyhound industry. I mean, if you can't afford a $400,000 thoroughbred racehorse, battlers who want to race their animals go into greyhounds. It's affordable. It's been sort of the working man's recreation. I know owners and trainers that, are battlers in Western Sydney. Owning a greyhound gives them hope in life. We talk about mental illness. The best remedy for mental illness or mental health is hope. And the hope of having the next Zoom Top or Palawar King, a champion dog, has been good for these people. And but there's always been the allegation about animal welfare and safety that have been made. 8 years ago, the Baird government closed down the industry. They brought it back after a lot of protests, after people were hard done by. But the problem in bringing it back, Brent, was that they allowed the animal welfare activists to infiltrate the regulator and Greyhound Racing New South Wales and work there. And they've joined these organisations to destroy them. Now, you know, as a matter of personal character, not many people take up a job to go in and destroy the organisation they're working for and close it down again. But that's what's gone on. The former CEO, he resigned this week, Rob McCauley, made some very strange recruitment decisions. And basically, you need people working in greyhounds who have two things in mind. They want greyhounds to be successful and viable 10 years from now. They're dedicated to the success of the industry, but also have a strong, reasonable concern for animal safety and welfare, which has improved dramatically, hugely, over the last 7 or 8 years since the Baird closed down. So you can achieve a viable greyhound industry, but I'm afraid having animal welfare activists and spies and saboteurs inside these organisations just generates the sort of publicity we've seen, the resignation of the CEO and now the new inquiry, which will basically sort of take us back to the McHugh report that started the problems 8 years ago. So it's a bit of a merry-go-round, I'm afraid to say, and not very good. I mean, you'd have to ask who would invest in greyhounds, given the way the industry is sabotaged within. That's the problem. You've got saboteurs inside these organisations who are dedicated to closing the industry down again.
It's a long, long time ago. We're going back 55 years here, 55 years. But I, as a boy, remember my grandfather going to the Bulleye Dog Track. He had a job there with the greyhounds. It was my grandfather's job and other blokes at the time. He used to put the dogs in the boxes before they started the race. And every now and then, on a Friday or Saturday night when they were racing the dogs, he'd take me, if I was staying with my grandmother and grandfather, he'd take me down with him and I'd help him put the dogs in the boxes at the Bulleye Racetrack 55 plus years ago.
Yeah,
now things have changed.
Well, it's been a working man's sport for a long while. It's brought a lot of people joy and happiness. Some people love their dogs so much they're treated better than humans. I saw a report on social media yesterday of someone with a winning dog who had them housed in a hotel room and was cooking them dinner. The dog's on the floor of the kitchen in the hotel room with the trainer cooking the dog dinner. So a lot of the allegations about animal cruelty are massively inflated. Your average greyhound trainer and owner absolutely loves their dog, as if it's a pet dog. But let's also be realistic about it. These dogs are bred and born to run. The idea they can have them as pets and sit on couches and sleep all day, that's the animal cruelty, because the dogs love to run. I've seen them run up at training facilities, the joy on their face. These dogs would love to run, and if we don't have greyhound racing, in 10 years' time, there'd be very few greyhounds left. So, unfortunately, the so-called animal welfare policy of closing down greyhound racing is to breed out the species, and that in itself would be tragic.
It would. Look, earlier this week, Malcolm Turnbull made an appearance on a television program. They call it The Project. He was asked a question, his thoughts about Peter Dutton as Prime Minister.
What do you think, what sort of Prime Minister will Peter Dutton make if he wins?
I think that's something we should contemplate with dread.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Don't talk back, Malcolm.
Why?
Well, he's a thug. And Peter's got one tune that he plays. I mean, and that's been all his political life. And that is division and animosity, generally targeted at immigrants. I couldn't think of anyone less suited to be Prime Minister of a multicultural society like Australia.
No Christmas card.
I mean, there's no point pulling my punches. It's an important question. I've given you an honest answer.
Your thoughts, Mark, about Mr. Turnbull's honest answer?
Well, it sounds like a Labor Party campaign commercial, doesn't it?
I mean, he's
now campaigning for the Labor Party and basically running their advertising strategy, Malcolm Turnbull. How he stays in the Liberal Party beggars belief. Is he really a member of the Liberal Party, given, you know, well, I mentioned earlier on, there aren't many people belonging to organisations who go in there to sabotage it, but there's Malcolm Turnbull keeping his Liberal Party membership ticket, campaigning for the Labor Party against Peter Dutton. I don't think many people regard Peter Dutton as a thug. He was a serving police officer in Queensland. He was a strong and effective minister in various governments from Howard through to Morrison. He's campaigning effectively on important issues. And what's the thing about migrants? Peter Dutton says Australia's migration level is too high. There are too many migrants. A big Australia program makes it harder for housing affordability, makes it harder for cost of living. Our cities are too crowded already. They're legitimate things to say, mainly because they're true. So there's nothing thuggish about that, and it's hard to believe that the Liberal Party hasn't kicked Turnbull out.
There are many that would like them to do that, but it appears as though the people that make the decisions don't have a real strong backbone because they haven't done it.
Well, they're scared of him. I don't know. Can he do any worse to them than that kind of interview? I don't think so, but at least they've got the integrity of saying our membership are people supported to the election of a Liberal Party government rather than campaigning for the Labor Party, and that's what Malcolm Turnbull's become. How he arrived there, of course, is a long story, and he's aggrieved that Dutton played a role in ending Turnbull's own prime ministership, and we got Scott Morrison out of it. So he's a good hater, he's after revenge, and yeah, he's one of those internal saboteurs, the like of which you don't see in many organisations, but we've got him around the place.
The Australian turns 60 years old tomorrow, and Rupert Murdoch, in an interview, he says Australia, one of the things he said as part of the interview was that Australia will be a republic in the next 10 years. Rupert Murdoch said that without a doubt, it is going to happen.
Well, Rupert Murdoch lives in New York, and I think that must be the view from an apartment in New York overlooking Central Park. Because if you went around a suburban shopping centre, you went into Newcastle or the Hunter Valley or the Illawarra or Western Sydney today, anywhere with these important seats, and said to people, what's your top 100 issues for Australia's future? I'm afraid the Republic wouldn't get in the top 100. So I doubt very much we'll be a Republic within a decade. And Rupert Murdoch, I think he's just shown he's a bit out of touch, isn't he, in saying that? Isn't it a bizarre thing to say about a country when you're living in New York?
It is. I know that Anthony Albanese has been asked about this this situation and having another referendum, and there was talk about it, but I think that's all on the back burner after the result of his voice referendum.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the chances of the Republic getting up now... They had said, the Republican movement had said, that once Queen Elizabeth passed away and we got King Charles, that would be their moment to strike. But you'd have to say Charles is doing okay. He hasn't been as weird and left-wing and green as he was as the Prince of Wales. So he hasn't been political at all. He hasn't been controversial. He seems to be discharging the duties well, even with the illness that he's had. So it's hard to see how the Republican movement has a moment in which to strike, and a referendum to that effect would be another waste of money.
All right, Mark, thank you so much, as always, for your time each and every Sunday. We enjoy our chats. I know our audience enjoy hearing your comments and what you've got to say. So you enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week. And go the Blues. Go the Blues on Wednesday night.
Absolutely, and I've enjoyed the interview very much. Thanks, Brent.
Okay, thanks, Mark.